welcome to Canqueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
My name is Sebastian, and today we have a special guest.
We do. I am very excited and thrilled that you were able to join us. We're here joined by Paul Minot, a superintendent with the Ottawa Paramedic Service. But that's not why you're here, although we may get to the coronavirus and the HIV connection a little later. Of which you also have no expertise in, so it doesn't really help.
Paul, as a paramedic, knows about as much as I do as a biologist. Like, we're sort of peripheral around the main issue.
So really, the one who doesn't know anything here is me. I am the one with zero training at all.
Yeah, we do have some training in how to, protect ourselves and protect others, because we end up being the vectors often in these kind of situations, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the reason why we have you here today is because you have an experience that's kind of similar to a man who has made an awful lot of news this week, and that is the presenter on This Morning, Philip Schofield, in the UK. Just for the Canadian audience who probably have no idea who this man is, This Morning is like Good Morning America. It's, you know, that morning time TV show.
Breakfast television.
But they have won the television award for 11 years in a row. Everybody knows who Philip Schofield is in the UK. Well, he was publicly straight, and it was him and Holly Willoughby who were presenting it for the last half a decade, if not a decade. But he came out as gay This Morning. And the reason why it's kind of making a few little shockwaves, and the reason why this was more of a big deal, and in the conversations I had with you, you know, if a teenager comes out, nobody really bats an eyelid anymore.
Depends on the family and the context.
You know, in your typical town, such and such a teen comes out, that's not really breaking story.
And half the time, I mean, not to stereotype too much, but some teenagers, a lot of people like, it's about time. We all knew.
Yeah, we got the memo when you were born, guy. Like, come on.
Right, some people know that their friends are gay or their kids are gay before they even know.
Yeah.
I had a friend when I lived in Hamilton who said his way of phrasing is that some gay men are a visible minority.
Yeah, very visible. But some of us are not.
Yeah.
And that's part of the problem too, right? Especially back in Philip Schofield's day, back in the 70s and early 80s, right?
Now, before we get into that, and we want to talk about a couple of other things, that'll be the meat and potatoes of the show, but Philip Schofield came out, and he has a wife and kids, and you yourself also came out with a wife and kids. I mean, you didn't reveal to the world you had a wife and kids. You had a wife and kids and then revealed to the world that that you were gay. So that's why you're joining us.
Correct, yes. So Philip and I share
a common bond.
And a common time in the world, in life, and a common lens. You know, we both grew up in the same time frame, roughly. He's about 7 or 8 years older than me, but that's pretty close.
Yeah. But before we get into that, I want to talk. So one of our favorite segments was, there is a study that states the obvious.
Okay.
And one of the studies that came out that states the obvious is that people who sound gay are seen as less competent than people who don't sound gay, according to a study. Now, you were talking about somebody who, you know, is a visible minority, so gay, you can tell at 30 paces.
200 paces.
200 paces. Yeah. Actually, we have a couple of friends that
that definitely fit into that,
that fit the bill.
Paul's nodding. You probably know them, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you've definitely come across your fair share.
You definitely fall into two streams.
Yeah.
Yeah, with it's the various affectations, the lisp, certain things.
There's a gait. There's a way of walking that from 200 paces, you're like, whoa, that's a gay man. And I don't know, I couldn't imitate it if you asked me to. Yeah, but
none of the gay men in this room have that, but we are aware of it.
I probably do it when I'm drunk, though. that's the thing.
Yeah, some it just might be. And I think sometimes we brand ourselves depending on the circumstances or where we're at with it.
Yeah. There is that issue, yeah.
So they had 340 heterosexual people listen to 8 different recordings.
Yeah.
2 straight men reading the same document.
Yeah.
And then 2 gay men reading the same document. two straight women and two lesbians reading the same document.
And the gay men were gay-sounding men.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And the lesbians were also gay-sounding.
Bearing in mind that somebody actually did a study of this back in the late 2000s, and they found that something, I think it was like 1 in 10 gay-sounding men are actually straight, that the gay-sounding voice is a separate phenomenon from being gay. Obviously, it overlaps strongly, but it's not 100% because you have a ton of gay men who do not have the gay-sounding voice.
So all of these 340 were asked, out of all of these 8 people, who do you think is the best, most competent for the job, the best fit, etc., etc.? Where all of the text being read was identical, it was just the intonation, tone, and the voice that differed. And they found that overwhelmingly, the gay respondents were found to have been less competent, the heterosexual people listening to it felt that they were less competent and less suitable for the jobs, especially the gay-sounding women.
Hmm.
So, yeah, for some reason, gay-sounding women... I didn't know if there was a such thing as a lesbian voice. Like, I mean, I've come across some lesbians who are like, oh, oh, oh.
Uh-huh.
But,
I was actually interacting with Stats Canada data recently, and I can tell you that gay men make on average 12% less... relative to their peers. But lesbian women tend to make 15% more. But that's only if they're self-employed. Self-employed lesbian women are the second highest earning group after heterosexual white men. Mm-hmm. So the LGBT effect of like making less income on average doesn't apply to lesbians, but only when they're self-employed.
I feel like self-employed lesbians are like big go-getters. You know what I mean? Like we've come across a few
self-employed
lesbians, and they don't mess around.
They get stuff done too.
Yeah,
they're too busy for hobbies.
Yeah, there's a lot of high-powered LGBT. There's a lot of discrepancy there, but there are still a lot of high-powered LGBTQ folks out there, right?
Yeah, for
they're
sure.
They're driven to make that example. Look at me. I can be good, and this defines me as
they
being good and
successful. They do tend to do better when they're self-employed as well. So, I mean, that's...
Well, if you want to read more about this particular study, it was in the Psychology of Women Quarterly that was released in December. The Pink News picked it up. We will be sharing that story. We're jumping to our first song. And this one is by LaRue of Bulletproof fame. Not famous for being physically bulletproof. The
LaRue didn't really make it that big in North America outside of certain
circles. I adored LaRue.
The kind of person who knows LaRue is also the kind of person who knows Robin.
Mm.
And not everybody knows Robin.
Everybody should know Robin.
Everybody should know Robin. And if you know Robin, you probably also know Eurovision. So, I mean, it's...
Yeah, so really, what's speaking to our people?
We're talking to gay men, their best friends, and people from Europe. Like, it's...
Yeah. Europeans and homosexuals. Target audience of LaRue. But anyway, LaRue didn't come out initially because she just revealed in a recent interview because her record label essentially said, you know, if you come out as a lesbian, it'll have a major impact on your marketability.
Everyone knew.
Yeah, no. LaRue is one of those 30 paces lesbians.
Yeah.
And when did this happen?
Pixie cut. Well, LaRue was big in, I want to say, like 2010 to 2015.
Yeah,
he was the early teens.
Yeah,
so it wasn't too long ago.
Yeah.
LaRue is now happily in a relationship with another lady. This is a brand new track that came out within this month, or just last month. It is called Automatic Driver, if I can get my teeth in straight. And we'll be back just after this.
Do you still dream?
and welcome back to Canqueer, home of Canada's queer media. I forgot something at the start of the show, and it's a pretty big deal.
Oh, what'd you forget?
I forgot that this is episode 150.
Wow, for congratulations. Canqueer.
Yeah. We did like 130-odd under the Velvet Studio.
And
like 50 or 60 under, maybe not 50, 60, maybe it was like 40-odd under Three Gays.
Well, I know we did a couple hundred before we started this. So yeah, we've been doing for quite some time, yeah.
Yeah, well, it must have been about 50 or 60 under Three Gays then, because it would have been. So anyway, we did a lot of radio, a lot of gay radio, a lot of talking. And thanks to our incredible listeners for bearing with us over the past couple of years. But yeah, 150, it's a heck of a milestone. We're very happy to achieve it. And we're happy to all of our dedicated listeners, our podcast listeners, including your mum, who gives us fantastic feedback on our Podbean. So I do read all of the feedback and take it on board. She did let us know about Hamilton. We'll pull up that in a minute
next
bit of the show. Now,
I'm going to have to open my Podbean then.
You'll have to look into it. One of the things, the meat and potatoes of today's show is going to be Philip Schofield. And what I wanted to talk about is not necessarily the fact that he came out, although the video is incredibly touching. Him and Holly present the breakfast show.
Sorry.
You started the show. Philip Schofield and Holly Willoughby present the morning TV show. So they're kind of like two peas in the pod.
That's part of the format.
And so Holly actually interviewed Philip in terms of this moment. I thought it was interesting. The one thing that jumped out at me is Holly read Philip Schofield's Instagram statement, which, said that he was gay. But in the entire 13-40 minute interview, I don't think I ever heard Philip Schofield himself say, "I am gay."
Right.
And I'm like, that's kind of, that's interesting. I mean, it takes a lot of courage to come out.
Yeah.
And it was clear as day he was coming out. Like, that's what the whole segment was. But he didn't say the words. I don't know if you noticed that.
Well, he's taken the second biggest step, right? And then the first step is coming out to the people important to him, his wife and his kids, and his closest circle, and then coming out to everyone else. And then it's a bit of a process for sure, right? Even saying those words to different people, workplace, other friends that have known you for your entire life, and have this image of you, and all your concerns around that. And of course, a lot of his circle of friends will be other people his age, which come from a different time that presented a lot of challenges for gay men.
Well, I mean, also coming out to the tens of millions of viewers.
Right, in his case.
It's also a different process, because for most people, coming out is a cyclical process. Every time you get a new job, every time you move, every time you meet a new neighbor, every time you meet anyone, it's coming out all over again. But when you are on one of the most watched TV shows in the nation, you're doing it once for everyone. Yeah. Like, obviously, you are going to start off with your loved ones first. But
you say that, but Boot Buttigieg, Pete Buttigieg.
Yeah, people still don't know that.
Very out.
Yeah.
But there was a famous clip of an Iowa caucus woman who suddenly discovered he was gay and then asked for a caucus card back.
Yeah, wanted to change her voting.
Yeah, that was... but when I'm talking, we're going to zero in on Philip Schofield.
Yeah.
What did you think of his coming out and kind of how that unfolded?
Well, I think it's very courageous, and it's... I think he finally probably felt safe. What I'm not sure of is, when did he know he was gay? Everyone assumes that everyone just knows it. Oh, I'm gay. And that's not always the case. So I'm not 100% sure. And he even talks in his statement about how him and his wife have been open about all this together. So it's unclear to me how long have the two of them at least known. Is it relatively recent? Is it a few years? It's so there's some questions there still.
It could have been from the start as well. Back when I worked in the bar, I used to work in a gay bar when I lived in Hamilton, and it was a regular bar as well. So it was, like, a lot of locals described it more as Cheers, where, like, people would sit at the bar, and then my job was mostly to entertain the customers, also pour drinks now and then. And I actually got to know them very well.
That's where you learned striptease.
Pardon?
What?
I would say about a quarter of my regular customers, because the bar mostly attracted like sort of mid-30s and up, about a quarter of my customers had ex-wives and children. And not all of them knew that they were gay when they were younger. Some of them did, and it was just, you know, there was no same-sex marriage rights. There was no adoption rights. Two men, despite how hard they try, can't make a baby. So if you wanted kids, then this was the cost of entry, was you marry a woman. And a few of them, the woman they married was completely aware of it. And they were just, they really just wanted kids. And like the husband was just sort of a thing that happened. And if you're only going to have sex when you're trying to make a baby, then all the better, because then they don't have to deal with the hassle otherwise. And it was, for some of them, it actually worked into a nice little package. And for others, it was way more complicated. It's all over the map.
Well, I think we need to talk about two different things here. There's one where you're in a man-woman relationship, and the woman's the beard. You know, it's the cover for a gay man.
Yeah.
To be able to move in straight spaces. But I do think that what would be the case here, or the impression I get from the case here with Philip Schofield, is that that self-actualization, that kind of penny-dropping, maybe I am gay moment, happened much, much later for him.
Mm.
And it wasn't, you know, his wife of 27 years wasn't a foil or a disguise for him to be able to move through spaces. Because
mm-hmm.
he talks a lot about having these dark thoughts, you know, struggling mentally with things. And it created the impression in me that he had been struggling internally with that sort of self-actualization, finding the words to, not necessarily finding the words, but accepting the words to describe himself. And then having the very difficult conversation with his wife of 27 years, the mother of his now adult children, that, you know, he isn't straight, and all of the ramifications that come out of that. Now, for yourself, Paul, was your former wife just a beard, or was it one of those that what I was implying, maybe took a while for the penny to drop before
She was not a beard. She was someone who I loved and I still love, and we get along great together. In fact, I would put us on a pedestal of sorts of divorced people, how you should run a divorce when you have kids, and how we still co-parent, and how we work together, and how we still team up when the kids try and play us, right? We team up and we stick together, we communicate. And I still love her. And we will be friends to the day I die. And so our children benefit from that. Never, ever was there no love for her. For me, and perhaps for Philip, was a period of time where I just didn't fit into that category of gay guys that you automatically know.
Yeah.
You know, in the 80s, when I was a teenager and when Philip was a teenager, I liked sports. I played sports. I didn't have that voice you were speaking of. Mm-hmm. I remember seeing at some point movies such as The Birdcage, where it's very, very stereotypical gay men. Mm-hmm. And I didn't fit into that mold. Keep in mind, there's no internet at this time either. Right?
Yeah.
Or the beginnings of it, but essentially no internet.
There was Midnight Cowboy, but it was also only played in porn theaters.
There you go.
So the Birdcage, for example, had Nathan Lane.
Yes.
And Nathan Lane is one of those 200 paces gay man
that we were talking about.
Yeah. For our audience who may not have seen it, The Birdcage with Robin Williams and Nathan Lane is a fantastic movie.
Yeah.
Very strongly recommend it. But you're right. That was representation at the time, was very, like, almost effeminate gay man.
Yeah,
that was the only option.
And that was, to me, that's what gay was to me. And I wasn't that. It was very, you know.
Or the Village People.
Yeah, no, none of that really, you know, applied.
Mm-hmm.
There was no role models per se. And, you know, I just figured all gay people were like that. And so therefore I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
And so I struggled for a while. Maybe I'm bi, but I'd never been with a guy. And I was, in my case, and I know there's other stories, and I don't know what Philip's story is, but I was in a monogamous relationship with my wife, and I was true to that. But as I was coming to realize who I was and do more reading and during that same time is passing and things are getting better in the world.
Yeah.
And things are getting better around us. You know, all the political strife, all the arguments back and forth against gay marriage, et cetera, HIV and AIDS in the early 80s. That's all going on in the background as Philip and I are teenagers and coming of age sexually, right? All saying gay is bad, gay is bad, gay is bad.
Gay is death.
Between, you know, starting in the late 70s, there's this disease going on in the in Africa. And,
was it
and,
GRID? Was what, GRIDS?
GRID was called later in the early 80s, like 81, 82.
Originally, it was called gay cancer for 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kaposi's sarcoma, gay cancer, yeah.
Yeah.
And the pneumonia.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's that breakout in L.A. with four or six gay men, and then in New York and elsewhere in California in the early 80s, 82. So Philip and I would be teenagers then, right? Coming of age. And all this was happening in the background. And it turned into, you gave the official name. It was also called gay acquired disease and also called the gay plague.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be the official medical term, but that's what was going around, right? You don't officially call things
the gay plague anymore.
So people like me are literally, people like me and Philip are literally probably terrified about being gay, about gay people and everything associated with and dying of AIDS.
I would say the gay plague is a poorly trimmed mustache.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think you're right there. There is, but what I think that context does is it silences any exploration. You know, it's head down. You know, maybe you'll see a handsome man across the street and you go, oh, yeah, maybe. But then it's like, no.
Yeah, that can't be.
You know,
yeah,
he's just eye thingies, what are they called?
Blinders.
You know, you put the blinders on because even thinking about that is a world of pain and hurt. And the
medical term for that is denial.
Yeah.
And one thing we know, you know, in the medical world is denial exists. Absolutely it does. Mm-hmm. And it's very true and it's very real. And so those blinders are called denial. And I think certainly for me, I was in denial for a long time.
Yeah. But it's not like how much of that was conscious, you know. And I think this is what some of our listeners will be wondering, especially, you know, Philip, who's 57, married 27 years, adult children.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what was he being willfully ignorant? Was he lying to his partner? Or was it the case of, as a coping mechanism, that you have to, you know, shutter yourself and sort of narrow your vision to be able to continue existing as you were?
Yeah.
Well, I think in his case, so there is that additional layer of being in the public eye. So like Lily Tomlin did not officially come out until her 40s. But like everybody in her life knew that she was a lesbian when she was in her 20s. It was just, was the public ready for it yet? Even though you'd have to be an idiot to see Lily Tomlin and not be like, oh, that's a big old lesbian. But there is that extra layer when you're talking about celebrity, for sure.
Absolutely. And celebrity, remember, Philip got involved in radio and in children's shows.
Yeah, children's TV.
TV in his teens. In his late teens, he was started to get into the business, if you will. And in that business, especially any kind of that business that has to do with children, you would never succeed or be successful if you were to be out as a gay man, gay men in that time, too, were also associated with being pedophiles, which is so absolutely 100% wrong and incorrect. But that was the reality back then, right?
The important context for Philip Schofield in the UK was he would have been 18 in 1980, and Margaret Thatcher came to power in 79 and was in power for 10 years. But it was under Thatcher that Section 28 came into being in the UK. And Section 28 is essentially the no-say-gay law in British education. And it was the moment where you couldn't even, you know, sign language the word gay, let alone teach it, talk about it.
Can you remind us the details of a no-say-gay law? Because we do talk about no-say-gay, especially in the context of Russia.
Russia is famous for its no-say-gay, but actually there's a few U.S. states that have laws quite similar.
Alabama,
And it's the idea that by talking about gay things or promoting gay things, or even just being gay in a room with a child, is seen as corrupting and pervasive and sort of sinister.
Mm.
So it's the idea of corrupting children.
Well, in some cases, some no-say-gay laws are you cannot discuss homosexuality in any context, in any negative or positive, while in an official position. So if you are like a state senator, or if you're a minister or a teacher or anything, or equivalent, if you're not in America, then you're not even allowed to discuss it. It's basically a gag order.
Yeah. Well, in Russia, it's public and private, so you can't talk about it in public. So work, employment, school, everything. It's no se gay. In the UK, in the 80s, when Philip Schofield was sort of starting his career, it was a blanket ban on homosexuality within the school system. And it was the idea of painting gay people as these villainous pedophiles. And there was spikes in homophobic violence.
Gay bashing went up dramatically. AIDS was associated as being the gays' fault in that period of time. That was Thatcher and Ronald Reagan in the States at that time. It was not a good time for gay folks when Philip and myself would have been in our early 20s, late teens.
But it's the same here in Canada. Let's not forget about the Canadian context.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think Project Soap was maybe a little bit later or around that time.
82.
And, you know, Alain Boisseau in Ottawa was killed in 89.
Yeah.
And in Vancouver, they also had things happening there that escaped me. But it's like,
well, there's Little Sisters, worldwide. But that started in 92.
Yeah,
but it wasn't that far behind, though, yeah.
But it was nationwide, and it was worldwide that the gay people were seen as villainous, broken, diseased, wrong. So blinkering that, especially if you're not the Nathan Lane of the world.
But they still listen to our music.
Yeah, you'd have to hide. You'd want to hide. Why would you want to be out? It would be terrifying. You would kill your career. You would kill your friendships. Why would you ever want to come out in that environment? It would be dangerous. It would be tantamount to some of these, you know, places of the world that are still like that, sadly, you know, where being gay is illegal.
Yeah.
That's basically, you know, do you want to have a job? Do you want to be able to feed yourself and your family? If you're not Nathan Lane, why would you ever come out? Why? It would be terrifying, and you're subjecting yourself to all this abuse, right? Mm.
But one of the things I want to stress for our listeners is that for some people, it wasn't a conscious decision. Oh, no, the world's dreadful. I think I'll be straight for a while. You know, it was more a case of...
In the 80s, that was a pretty effective survival tactic.
For some, what are now gay people.
Yeah.
But for some gay people... It wasn't, it was sometimes a case of not even thinking about it.
Not being a conscious decision.
Yeah. It was like, it was automatic driving almost. Like, you're expected to be straight. I'm not Nathan Lane, therefore I'm straight.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even think about the other lanes in the highway. I'm going down this lane and we'll take it day by day. And I think that, you know, because one of the things when we're looking at scenarios where, you know, wife of 27 years, adult children, it does beg the question, you know, how did it get so far? How did it take so long? You know, why didn't you tell them sooner? You know, were you misleading the person you love? Mm-hmm. You know, what about the impact on the children? But I think it's like I said, it's that automatic driving down the lane where it's like, why not even think about that?
Also, the longer you're in that, you get more and more stuck the longer it goes on. Mm-hmm. Your whole life is, you've built this life of friends and family and everyone that just thinks of you as a certain person. And even though nowadays, not back then, nowadays, a lot of people would just say, oh, well, you should have just come out. It's no big deal. We still love you. You don't know that. Mm-hmm. You're not convinced of that. And even to this day, there'll be people, I'm sure Philip is getting a lot of, background hate on social media, I'm sure, because that exists. I think I see more love than hate, thank goodness. But, it's still a worry for that person. Mm-hmm. And you just feel like, oh, everyone knows me as this. I've been such a liar. I've been such a fake. But I'm a good person otherwise. And it's just hard to get out of that shell, you know?
It's that cognitive dissonance almost, that kind of maintaining two different realities within your mind and the sort of mental stress of that. I'm curious, Paul, if you're willing to share with us and our listeners a little bit of that moment for you where you realized I'm in the wrong lane here.
Yeah, well, I say it was gradual. I would say probably around age 35 or 36, I started having those questions. I was married. I had two kids at that point in time. Loved my wife and children, still do. She's my ex-wife now, but we're great friends. At first, I like a lot of us, I think, I was saying, I wonder if I maybe just bi. Mm-hmm. I wonder if that, you know, looking at that cute guy across the street is like, you know, well, everyone can identify a cute person, regard a handsome person, regardless of your sexuality. And I'm kind of thinking, I think there's a little bit more to that, you know? And as the internet is developing and there's now talk and chat groups and private confidential chat groups, you can talk to other people that are in that situation, which is what I did. I got onto a group called Husbands Out to Wives, and you realize that there's other people in the same circumstances. And I think initially I started buying books. I was keeping them secret and hiding them and reading through them and reading people's stories that were just like mine, not Nathan Lane's story, but just like my story. And I was on a cruise with my family, including my parents. And I had this book coming, Loving Someone Gay, written by an American, I think from California. And he paints a story of a story very similar to mine and Phillips. And as I was reading through it, I'm sitting in my cabin in this on this ship in the middle of the Atlantic somewhere. And it just came to me. It's like, that is me. That is me. What he's describing right there is me. And I just started to cry, bawled into my pillow. It was, and I realized, and, you know, somewhere in the middle, and I said the words. I said the words to myself. I am gay. I am, and I was just crying, and you know, buried my head in the pillow. But it took time, and even then, I think I spent about a year of going back and forth. Maybe I'm bi, and this can work. I'm just bisexual, maybe, right? And I still, by all means, love my wife. She was still my wife at that time, of course. And it took a good, at least another year or so to say of educating myself and getting some support, some anonymous support and getting some help through a EAP program at work. Other than that, I was still very, very closeted to literally everyone. That I eventually said, not bi, and this can't work in this way. I'm gay and I need to admit to it. I'm old enough and I'm sort of free of the shackles of my religious background. Asterisks there, my religious parents, family, very positive. And, you know, while I often tell people almost all of our enemies are religious people, but not all religious people are our enemies. And thank goodness my family are the latter, right? Good religious people. I forget where I was going with this now, though. But
you know, I think where you were at is the penny's dropped. And at that point, it's really hard to go back. You know, there's a degree of forward momentum. You're looking at your life with a new lens, maybe clear prescription from the doctor.
And I think I had the confidence of, at that point, I don't know, I guess that now I'm a 37-ish, 30, somewhere in the 35 to 37 range, the confidence of not, well, I care what other people think, but I'm just more secure in my own skin, if you will, and ready to take that step. And I had to do it. But the other thing I think that's important is, it wasn't like all of a sudden, hey, I'm gay and I want a divorce. That wasn't my message. No. I want to share with you my reality, my truth, and let's work forward. You know, I want you, other than EAP and this anonymous support group, you know, my wife, you're the first person I'm telling, and I want to work with you. How can we figure this out? You know, we've got two young kids and I'm not abandoning you. I'm not leaving you. I don't have some other guy in the background that's going to replace you. Let's just try and figure this out. I knew from the research I had done and all the talking I had done on this anonymous support group that essentially within about 3 years, most people end up getting divorced that are in this situation. And
it's called irreconcilable differences.
Yeah, but you know, it really varied in this group. It varied depending how old you were. And now I'm still in my 30s at this point in time. So I've lived, a very different life since that point. We got divorced, but we remain great friends and great co-parents. I have 50-50 custody of the kids. But I also saw people in this group that were older, even in around Philip's age back then, who just decided to either do one of two things. They're just going to just carry on. They just carry on with their wife and married and with their kids. And they have no need or want to or desire to change that. And they both still love each other. And why not? And then, you know, of course, there's always other options that people entertain. You know, she might want the company of a man in that way. He might want the company of a man in that way. And and either they could get divorced or they don't have to. You know, there are other options out there, yeah. like open relationships, that kind of thing, where people can work things out and they still live together and love each other and grow old together.
A marriage is such an investment of time,
yeah.
of money, but of emotional labor. It's, you know, it takes... That's a lot of time spent loving someone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think that's not easy to walk away from. And I would imagine it's extremely difficult to walk away from. Did the thought cross your mind of maybe not saying anything and just carrying on with your wife and kids?
Oh, yeah. Even to the day that I finally had the talk with my wife at the time, I was just struggling and struggling and struggling and struggling and struggling. And then I told her, and I wanted it to remain between us.
Mm.
So that her and I could figure out how to work things out.
Form a united front.
A united front, yeah. and also probably out of a certain degree of fear of coming out. Sadly, you know, like once you start telling people, they need support, they go to friends and family, and sometimes stuff starts to leak out. And in my case, stuff did start to leak out. And in fact, the irony is my wife at the time was very upset that it leaked out. She was upset because it was sort of from her side that the message leaked out. And it wasn't necessarily leaked out in a bad way, but it sort of leaked out before she had time to absorb it and sit down and we could have time to talk about how to move forward. So she herself was even upset that it leaked out. But what that did is it sort of forced me down Philip Schofield's path where he's out to everyone now. I literally, you know, I was in media relations at the time and I basically wanted to control the message.
Yeah.
I wanted it to stay between me and my wife at the time, but that quickly changed. And so it was imperative to me that my circle of friends, my family and people at work that are important to me know who I am and know my truth and know my message and not to confuse it with any other potential rumors or whatever. So I then over the next month told parents first, brothers and sister next, and then my core group of friends, and then literally an email to the senior management team at work, a very high level thing. Hey, by the way, a lot of stuff going on in my life, and here's the fact.
Yeah, yeah.
Nothing too much with them, but because I basically it's like, okay, I'm out, and I'm now what, 38 or something.
Yeah.
After, and it's like I'm just out, and so the nice thing for Philip too is that although this is a difficult time for him, he basically is 100% out.
Yeah.
And now he can just be like that. He doesn't have to lie and have that. You know, you talked about that cyclical pattern of having to come out constantly. Like,
yeah.
We all still have to do that. But
like when he travels, but I mean, within England, he's a big name.
Well, yeah. I think what's interesting here is one of the notes that Philip Schofield said was, you know, he's been having this conversation with his wife for the last couple of years. Like, it is a slow process. It's a long, difficult, but very important conversation to have.
Good for him, and good for her.
Yeah.
Good for her.
Like, she is very supportive.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Which is incredible. But one of the things that they noted was there was no blackmail. There's no Mr. You know, Prince Charming hanging in the wings where I need to sweep him off his feet. There's no affair. There was no, you know, no trigger that forced it to happen. It was this self-actualization, being like, okay, we're at a point now where I can't go backwards. I need to go forwards. And I think that's what we are hearing from Philip Schofield. And it sounds like that's a lot of the shared experience that you had as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's also in a safe space now, right? A safe time in life, safe time in his career. And I'm not saying that that's why, but that just helped probably psychologically for him to do what he had to do. And he also had the support of his wife, which sounds like I'm sure it's still a challenge and difficult for them, but that makes a big difference.
Well, we'll be back with some of the reaction to Philip Schofield's coming out in just a minute. We're playing Kate Renata with 10%, and we'll be back just after this.
Trying to lie for them, pretending who you are, but baby, why even pretend? can ask why, cause that's my witness. You just don't have a clue what to be. Look in your eyes, I see the envy. I don't check for these other bitches. You can ask why, cause that's my witness. Why are you trying to lie for them? Pretending who you are, but baby, why even pretend? You're trying way too hard. Ego is not your friend. I only speak the truth, no, I'm not trying to offend. Why are you trying to lie for them?
Welcome back to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Dilip Smith.
I'm Sebastian.
And we're joined by Paul Minot. Thank you so much for joining us. We were just gossiping over some tea during the musical break. One of the things I want us to address, just to wrap up the Phillips Schofield thing, is the context. So we talked about Margaret Thatcher and the No Say Gay, but there are many other reasons why someone would have, you know, those blinkers on, or would choose not to explore it. So religion, you mentioned that your parents were quite religious. That could have an impact on someone's decision whether or not to think about it, because it's not the, you know, now, with thanks to Lady Gaga, we all know we're born gay, but we're born this way. But before Lady Gaga told us all about this, yes, you know, it was a case of like, you know, that's not, it's not the done thing. You know, what are some of the contexts where being out just becomes that much more difficult, especially in the 80s and the 70s through to the 90s, I suppose?
Some of those factors are still true today, but I mean, what makes it difficult back then would be the legislation, the law, whether homosexuality was illegal, when it was legalized, when same-sex marriage was legalized, and what was it, 2015 in the United States?
Northern Ireland in 2020.
Yeah, just this year, Northern Ireland, right? All of those factors come into place. The HIV and AIDS epidemic, which was only after over 700,000 gay men died, or I'm not sure if they're all gay men. But
what's the relationship between the community and the police? So, like, the police weren't homophobic in the way that they would, like, target and abuse black people. Like, even in Canada, there is a history between the police and the black community. In Canada, it was more an issue of indifference. Like, something would happen and the police would just sort of shrug and be like, sounds like a you problem. So the lack of involvement, so if anything did happen to you, did you have the law on your side? Probably not. They probably wouldn't even file a report.
Right.
So they're that as well.
And the other factors, I think, are the other big factors are religion, and depending on the religious background that you're brought up in. But generally speaking, just a very generally speaking, not very positive towards gay people. I think there's a lot of exceptions to that now, you know, but back in the day there was Anita Bryant and Jerry Falwell, you know, just terrible, terrible, hateful people that in my religious family that I grew up with certainly would never subscribe to that type of religious hatred at all. So thank goodness at least I had, you know, the positive religious
Believe folks. It or not, when I was young, I actually went to Sunday school as well. And we used to watch the 700 Club with the purpose of laughing at it.
Yeah.
So it's Church of England. So, and the Anglicans were all, well, my minister was like, it's a metaphor. Some of it's probably true. Just treat it like a metaphor just to be safe. So he was very progressive, but it was also like, we also saw a lot of that religious extremism and the only approach was to laugh. It's the only thing we could reasonably do. But it was like the TV evangelist. That was the era where like the millionaire TV evangelist was born.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we didn't have that so much in the UK, that sort of TV evangelism.
But you did have rural areas. That's another factor. Yeah, rural versus urban. And having access to supports in urban areas that have more, you know, LGBT groups and support in that way. We didn't have, back in the day, the internet. You know, another huge factor, having the internet, having access instantaneously to people all around the world, that suddenly these smaller groups, these marginalized groups, including gay men, LGBTQ folks, now have access to all the rest of us that exist in the world, right?
You can share experience and talk to each other. These are all important things to consider. So if somebody comes out now, you know, in the 50s, 60s, 40s, it's always worth thinking, what was the world like when they were 18?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think, you know, for Philip Schofield, for yourself, it wasn't particularly ideal for, you know, it's not a great scenario for the homo.
That's so generous. It was extremely hostile. You know, you have to look through that lens. Exactly. I'm glad you mentioned that, because people might look at today and say, Philip, today is like, you're a successful guy.
It's 2020.
Guy. You're a successful guy in 2020 living in the UK. It's like, yeah, but he would have never gotten to where he was had he come out in the 70s and early 80s when he was just starting his career.
Yeah.
Never, ever. As we just described today, and I hope people realize, what a terrible time for gay folks, right?
Yeah. Well, there is some good news. I want to end on a bit of a good news.
Oh.
In Croatia, there's no same-sex marriage, but you can be life partners currently. And
you can do that anywhere, but what's the legal support?
It's the same as marriage.
Oh, so like a civil partnership.
Yeah.
Okay.
And in Croatia, the highest court just legalized same-sex adoption.
Oh.
Same-sex fostering, which is sort of part of this ongoing push towards getting adoption. So that was some nice news in Croatia, some forward thinking. In Switzerland, they're currently having a referendum to decide whether or not homophobic discrimination or discrimination based on sexual orientation should be legalized. There was a kindergarten that banned the child from a gay couple from attending because it was the child of a gay couple. Mm. And everyone was like, oh my God, that's ridiculous. How can they get away with it? Well, it turns out there's no law against it. So they're currently deciding to introduce that law via referendum. So that will be, we hope Switzerland will err on the side of not having homophobic right of way. But we'll see how that unfolds. We will be keeping an eye on Eurovision. We're hoping to do a great interview with Mayor Watson, looking back on his coming out last August, to see where he's at now and what he thinks of that. So we're waiting just for a time to set that up. Very exciting. And there's been a bunch of other news. Virginia introduced civil rights protections for LGBT folks, one of the first southern states to do so. So a massive step in the U.S. And Pete Buttigieg maybe won the Iowa caucus. Who knows?
Oh, that whole thing was a
maybe
mess.
In a month we'll be able to figure it out.
It was really hard to find good news this week because everybody was just talking about the Iowa caucus. And my favorite article that I read so far was said, let's just ignore this year's results and talk about the Iowa caucus in general. It's badly organized. This year was inevitable. Mm. Don't blame it on these people. It's just a bad... I don't like blaming the individual for a bad system.
But it's the reason why I'm bringing it up is even though we're in the age of Trump, a gay man who was mayor just won, you know...
Well, he declared himself the winner and people didn't feel like... arguing against it.
Well, it wasn't. It's very fuzzy.
It's you stand in a room next to a sign with a name on it. It's not a well organized system.
No.
It's if you had 200 people because you're a rural community in 1873, that system is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
It aged poorly.
Well, we are done for the day. We have reached the end of the show, and we are playing out with Kylo. My gosh, I struggled with that name.
Yeah.
And coming for you, any particular reason you chose it?
You said we need another Canadian artist, so whenever we need a Canadian artist, I just look up LGBT Montreal, because that's where the country culture comes from in Canada. Whether you like it or not, you know,
some of the culture comes from.
All the power comes from Toronto, and all the culture comes from Montreal.
I'm sure what our listeners around the country are going to love you for that.
And all the good weed comes from Vancouver.
Well, I mean, you might be right there. Anyways, I've been Luke Smith.
I've been Sebastian.
And I'm Paul Morneau.
And thank you for listening.
I'm coming for you.